90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. Today is Friday, September 25th, 2009. And this is Air Cascadia. Long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
Measure 11 took a direct hit for the first time yesterday.
Chip Shields is District 22's newest senator.
And in New York, Yes Men founder Andy Biklbaum is out of jail, and the Survivor Balls campaign is officially on the road.
Portland area weather today, mostly sunny this afternoon. Highs around 80 tonight. Mostly clear, or patchy low fog, and then around 50, and then the same on the weekend. Cloudy mornings and sunny afternoons.
And we're going to go first to some regional stories from around Cascadia. 15 years ago, the scientists became concerned about the extraordinary levels of mercury in the Cottage Grove Reservoir. It must have been relatively easy, though, to trace the contamination to the nearby Black Butte Mercury Mine. This isn't rocket science. Now the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency proposes putting the huge mine on its national list of top priority cleanup sites, known as, of course, the Superfund. Oregon and EPA officials say the Superfund listing is all the more urgent after EPA-funded cleanup work in 2007 found that the situation was worse than expected. Up to 75% of the reservoir's mercury was attributable to the mine.
Sometimes all it takes is a threat of a lawsuit to get things rolling. The Oregon Department of Transportation has agreed to upgrade how it handles polluted runoff from the state's highways. ODOT is going to put $10 million into roadside wetlands and swales to treat stormwater over the next 5 years. But wait, there's more. The agency will also monitor for an extensive suite of pollutants, including heavy metals, industrial contaminants, and herbicides that ODOT sprays to keep roadside weeds in check. Here's an idea. How about we enforce existing laws and stop spraying herbicides? And where's the money coming from? It's coming from ODOT's fish passage budget.
On a further environmental note, yesterday we had as a guest on the show Zach Rosenick with the J student newspaper at the Jewell High School, and we have to make a retraction and a correction here. First off, we want to make a correction regarding something that was said on yesterday's Air Cascadia show. One of our guests was Zach Rosenick. He was identified as the author of an article on LNG. This is incorrect. He is the editor of the paper. And he did not write the article. We apologize for the error. And we do still think that the J student newspaper is doing a terrific job, and we wish them all the best. Now, we join the Meadows Hill Doctors Caravan as it arrives this morning in Chicago. Our guest this morning is Dr. Eugene Uphoff. Good morning, Dr. Uphoff. Thanks so much for being back with us again on Air Cascadia.
Good morning, Chris. Thanks very much. I'm going to get in touch with quieter. I hope you can hear me better.
Okay. Well, the caravan now, you're in Chicago. There are a great many other events going on around the country, notably the G20 summit in Pittsburgh. The United Nations General Assembly has just finished convening in New York City. And healthcare is still out there in limbo. The original bill being torn apart piece by piece and not reassembled in anything like an order which would serve the American people. Can you talk a little bit about this?
Yes, I think the hardest thing for us while we're traveling has been that we've not been able to get access to news. So I don't think I can directly on that. What I can tell you is that the thing that's happened just in the last week has been a tremendous increase in frustration with the lack of a meaningful health care reform bill that will provide coverage and access to the 49 million people who don't have insurance right now. We see that in the falling numbers of polls of people who think that the Senate bill that's being reported out by Senator Baucus is actually meeting the needs to provide insurance. And I think right now nobody, either in the conservative Republican Party or among the conservative Democrats, is even pretending that the bills that they're reporting out are going to cover everybody.
How does the future look? What are people saying to you as you travel across the country? What have you been hearing?
I think the thing that's been most astounding is how horrible the status of health care insurance in this country has been. We have heard from one person after another at every one of the town hall meetings and rallies that we've had that people are just suffering from lack of insurance. And these are people with undiagnosed medical conditions, and they're having symptoms that they can't be seen for, as well as the people who have really serious and devastating illnesses or cancers or heart disease for which no treatment is available because they don't have the funding. It's really heart-wrenching to hear the stories that people have told us as we've traveled across the state. We've been, of course, through the West and the Midwest and Wisconsin, Minnesota, and down, went down as far as Nashville in the South, and came back up through Louisville, and then we were in Detroit last night. Had a huge rally in Detroit. And it was astounding to me to hear one person after another get up and tell us what kind of frustrations they've had trying to get care, either for themselves or for family members who just haven't insurance. Detroit, particularly hard hit by the unemployment, has had more than its share of people who've lost their insurance coverage through employers. And I guess our feeling as MediHealth doctors is the biggest argument for single-payer health care insurance is that everybody would be covered, and it doesn't matter whether you're rich or not, whether you're employed or not, or whether you're healthy or not.
It's really the only answer. That's all we have time for this morning. We'd like to catch up with you again on Monday. Thank you again so much for joining us this morning on Air Cascadia, and also for being part of the caravan and taking the message to the nation. Again, my guest has been Dr. Eugene Uphoff with MediHealth Doctors, speaking with us in Chicago.
Thank you so much.
39th Avenue is officially Cesar Chavez Boulevard. It's been a long, loud struggle, but the voices of reason ultimately prevailed. The city's online mapping engine, Portland Maps, has recognized both names since August 7th, which is when the change became official. Google Maps or MapQuest are slower to get with the program, but the change is coming. Opponents might want to rename one of their streets Bigotry Lane or Racist Road.
It's hard not to notice that the familiar white male face of Chip Shields has risen to the surface of the pool of potentials vying to replace Senator Margaret Carter. Yesterday, the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners chose Shields as Oregon's newest senator. Carter resigned after accepting a position with the State Department of Human Services. Once he's sworn into office, Shields will be canvassing the neighborhoods in his new district and getting to know the people that he will represent. The second-place contender, Joanne Bowman, is, of course, already familiar with the people that Shields will be representing. I'm just saying.
Yesterday, the Oregon Supreme Court slapped up Measure 11 when it ruled that the severity of a criminal penalty must be related to the gravity of the offense. This is the first successful challenge to mandatory minimum sentencing. The ruling doesn't repeal Measure 11, and it doesn't affect any issues except, or any cases except the two that were appealed to the Supreme Court. But it's the first chink in a law that's been hailed by some for lowering crime and called draconian one-size-fits-all justice by others.
Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley wants federal officials to explain why $75 billion in funding to help people avoid foreclosure is not flowing faster to people in need. So far, Merkley has written to Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner, to Sean Duncan, who heads the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and he has directly confronted a Treasury official during a Senate hearing. This is, in a sense, a quid pro quo in that the money was added to by the Obama administration at the insistence of Merkley and other senators in return for their support last January of legislation to release $350 billion in funds to save faltering banks.
Behind on your taxes? As of October 1st, you have 50 days to come up with the scratch and no penalties. The 2009 Oregon legislature created the state's first-ever amnesty program mainly because of the budget squeeze. Lawmakers hope to collect at least $16 million, money that in the hands of individuals does little or nothing to improve the common good, but pooled together in one pot, the money buys schools, roads, libraries, and parks. Oh no, socialism.
There it is. We are going to try to reach Melissa Minnick with the Thomas Merton Center, who is in Pittsburgh at the demonstrations, at the protests against the G20 summit right now. Just before we bring you that story, hopefully we will get through to her. Just to let you know that the Balls Across America Direct Action Campaign is officially launched. And Yes Men's Andy Bicklebaum, the co-founder of the activist group, is officially out of jail. After 26 hours in New York City central lockup, Bicklebaum was released with all charges against him dismissed. At 10 a.m. on Tuesday, Bicklebaum was arrested and charged with trespassing after he and 21 survivor balls gathered in New York City's East River and announced they were going to take the UN by storm from the water, since all the land approaches were sealed. Once at the United Nations, they would supposedly use the survivor balls to blockade the negotiations and refuse to let world leaders leave the room until they'd agreed on sweeping cuts in greenhouse gas emissions. And now, we hope we'd be able to reach Melissa Minnick with the Thomas Merton Center in Pittsburgh. Good morning, Melissa. Thank you so much for joining us today. What's going on there?
Well, actually, I'm in the middle of a march. It's a big people's march, which has started, we gathered at noon, which is 9 o'clock your time. And so we are headed down Fifth Avenue. A lot of people have shown up for this, lots of signs, lots of chants. And I think it's going to be successful.
What about the police presence? What's been going on? I know that there have been reports of some aggression, that the Resist G20 group had met with show of force on the part of the police. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, today things seem like they are relatively better and more peaceful, more calm. Also, it can be noted that this is a permitted march today, and it was unpermitted yesterday, which kind of caused some of the hostility, I believe. One thing that we were looking for that did not happen this morning was actually that at the intersection that we had sanctioned off, we had a permit for that. Traffic was supposed to stop at 11 o'clock, and then the rally starts at 12, and there was no cutoff from traffic, so we actually just cut it off ourselves by pouring into the streets.
Direct action, inaction, once again. So how many, just give us a rough idea, do you have any notion of how many people are there?
I'm pretty awful at numbers. We don't even have everybody yet, because we're about to link up with another feeder march. Definitely in the thousands, but I know that's not much use.
What else will be going on? Can you give us a picture of what the rest of the day looks like for you there in Pittsburgh?
Well, we're going to be stopping at the federal building, at the city county building, and as close as we can get to the convention center, which includes walking over the 7th Street Bridge, and it's going to be ending in the East Park, which is on the north side.
And
so at all these places, there are going to be speakers and rallies.
Thank you so much for that. My guest has been Melissa Minnick with the Thomas Merton Center, who is in Pittsburgh at the protest march against the G20 summit right now, as we've been speaking. And finally,
a Cleveland, Ohio car repo company is under fire after taking a car away with a 4-year-old boy sleeping in the back seat. The repo company drove off with the child's mother, Salima Tootstone, holding her 1-year-old while clinging to the car, screaming that her other child was still inside. Tootstone was dragged the length of about 30 houses. The car was eventually abandoned 5 miles away. When a local TV station went to the dealership, workers scattered and hid behind locked doors. This has been Air Cascadia for Friday, September 25th, 2009. Engineering is Trillian Shannon, who is also assisting Kathleen Stevenson back from sabbatical with bells on. She's the KBU AM News and Public Affairs Director. Chris Andre is the producer. I'm Liam Delphi.
I'm Chris Andre, and you're listening to All Natural Free Range, non-syndicated KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM in Portland, KBOO.FM on the web. Your support, and your support only, keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.
Coming up next, Flashpoint, more from Honduras, and a short interview about the film Crude, The Real Price of Oil, about the struggle for environmental justice in Ecuador. Crude is one of the films in the Human Rights Film Festival in Portland.
Thanks for listening, and have a good day.